Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Mona Montgomery with the Holo Hoax. You know, I've said many times there were no gas chambers in Germany. Hitler had no intention of exterminating the Jews. In fact, it was just the opposite. The Jews have been exterminating us since 1919, when they assassinated the white Christian Tsar of Russia, and then proceeded to assassinate 65 million white Christians, 30 million Germans after the Second World War, and approximately 150 million white Christian soldiers on the battlefield of the American, English, and German, and Russian Second World War. Also, 6 million people didn't die in the gas chambers. The only people who died of typhus and starvation, probably about 300,000. All of this is very pertinent to the war in Iraq. If white Christian people could be manipulated into giving their lives by the tens of millions in order to create the State of Israel during the Second World War and the First World War, then why couldn't the same trick be played on the white race during the Third World War? I think that's exactly what's happened. I think we're going to war against Iraq because Iraq is Israel's enemy, not the enemy of the United States of America, and that the plan is to strengthen Israel so that Israel can take over the world, even if it means depleting America of all of her men, money, and natural resources. Before you commit yourself to an endless war, which is what this is going to be, it's only right to look at the variables and make sure this is what you want to do. And Americans and people from all over the world have every right to ask questions. Now, certainly one of the reasonable questions is, why are we going after Saddam and not after other people who are equally as evil? Not to mention first on the list, which is Ariel Sharon. I'm not saying what we're doing is right or wrong, because I don't even know why we're doing what we're doing. But I do think we have a right to know why we're doing what we're doing. We weren't concerned the least little bit with Mugabe, who was setting up his black people in Zimbabwe to pick up farm implements and chop up all of the 5,500 white farmers to bits while they were still alive, which is what they did to them in South Africa. Why didn't we care about those people? Why do we only care about Iraq, Afghanistan, Syria? Well, obviously, it's because this is oil, right? So we're focusing on oil, and I think we're also focusing on water, since the Tigris and the Euphrates make Iraq into the Fertile Crescent. In other words, it has the most water in the entire Middle East. By the way, did you know that they're already opening up the oil pipeline that goes from Iraq to Haifa? It goes right through Syria. And they've already said that the next on the list will be Syria. As soon as they can get a regime change in both Iraq and Syria, they've got that pipeline that goes down to Israel. So I think there's definitely an Israel connection here. But I'll be honest, I don't know the reason for this war. All I know is that it's important for us to know. And it's not enough anymore to continue to ask questions of each other. We all know we don't know. So let's start trying to figure out why. We've got to start bringing up theories, even conspiracy theories. We've got to throw every theory we can out on the table to figure out, why is our government committing us to an endless, perpetual, eternal war? Well, I think it's important to ask these questions. Where is the UN? That's certainly a good question. But what isn't a good response to questioning America is to try to deflect the questioning by bringing up another subject to question. We certainly need to question the UN. We need to question everyone that has power to make sure the power is being used correctly. We're at a time in history where we can't fool around anymore with opportunistic projects that take advantage of the crisis. We have to focus on the crisis. The crisis, as I see it, is that weapons of mass destruction have proliferated into the hands of irresponsible parties. If we can agree that that's the crisis, now we have to try to figure out what's to do about, what do we do about the crisis. I feel that the proper thing to do is to strengthen the United Nations, because I think this is a global crisis. The amount of power we're talking about and the target for this power, which is possibly world extinction. Trashing a planet is not something you joke around about. We're at a place where we can blow up the planet 20 or 50 times over. We have to be mature with the use of our power. And this is not a time for jokes and irresponsible statements like death to Iran, or I'm going to tear those people limb from limb, I'm so wonderful and big. This is the time where intelligence has to prevail. The first step toward intelligence is asking intelligent questions. Most people in this room are asking the question, why is America hitting Iraq? That's a good question. The next man brings up the question, why is the United Nations not hitting Iraq? And that's a good question. We do have to come up with answers. About 10 years ago, we decided that Nicaragua had a bad dictator in power, and so we did to Nicaragua exactly what you're seeing us do to Iraq. The same thing was done by the communists, which it was a worldwide power, in 1917 to Russia. You destabilize the government, you impoverish the people, you get the people to uprise, and then you use the unstable criminal elements within the country to rise up against the leadership, the middle class, the upper class, and kill them all. In Russia, the death count by the end of the Second World War, relating only to the revolution, not talking about the death count on the battlefield, was 65 million people. That's too many people for a government to kill without being held accountable. In Nicaragua, we basically bombed Nicaragua into the Stone Age and then created so much instability that all these unstable elements got together and went crazy and destroyed the rest of the country. Nicaragua went to the Security Council and said, please tell America to stop this stuff. And every member of the Security Council signed a resolution that would stop America from acting in an aggressive, unlawful way in relationship to Nicaragua and every other state. Every member of the Security Council signed that resolution except for the USA. So then Nicaragua took the next proper procedural step, which was to go to the General Assembly, and every single nation signed the resolution with the exception of Israel and the United States and one other very small country. So what I'm trying to point out is that the United Nations would work if it weren't for the fact that the United States refuses to act properly according to the procedures of the United Nations. In the one case where the case was brought against the United States to stop aggressive activity in Nicaragua, the entire world agreed that it should be done except the United States, so it couldn't be done. In the case of Iraq, no one in the United Nations wants this aggressive act to take place except the United States, so it's going forward. What I'm suggesting is that the United Nations isn't the problem, it's the United States. And if that's true, then because we happen to live in a free country, we, the people of the United States, are personally guilty if we don't exercise our power and our rights in a way that will put a stop to our government's illegal activity.
Why?
Well, somebody has to be the police of the world, even if it's the world court. It doesn't matter who the police of the world is. What matters is the world being policed properly? If you were the police of the world, how would you do the policing? Would you get the Middle East under control the way the United States is doing? Or would you rather have a world body court like the United Nations? in which aggrieved nations come before the court and make their grievances known, and then the world court issues some kind of ultimatum or dictate to the offending nation, and then you have to trust that the offending nation is going to do the right thing. I'm not posing this question because I know the answer. I'm posing it because I don't know the answer. But I do know this. There has to be some kind of police force. Somebody has to be stronger than the unstable elements of the world once they get hold of weapons of mass destruction. That's what I'm trying to say. We do need some kind of police force. Either it's going to be a superpower like the United Nations, like the United States, or it's going to be a group power like the United Nations, or it might be some alliance of nations. But you can't let the world go without some police actions, because if you do, you'll have more weapons of mass destruction proliferating into the hands of more irresponsible parties, and that you cannot do. I suspect that after we get Iraq's regime changed the way we like it and put the Israeli general in charge, which we've already done, whose name is, I always get that wrong, is it Rafe Fenton? No, I think it's Jay Garner. Jay Garner is the interim administrator in Iraq, and he is a Jew with Zionistic. His roots are in Zionism, which means he wants greater Israel to be manifested. That means all of the land from the Nile to the Euphrates is supposed to become Israel, which I think is terrible. But that's the Zionist agenda. So we've already got a Zionist in the position of interim administrator. He'll be in charge of Iraq for at least 2 years. And I'm taking bets that he's going to divert the oil and the water into Israel. And after Israel has finished stealing the water from Iraq, like she stole 80% of the water from Palestine, she will once again be dancing and saying that God has created a miracle and made the desert to bloom. Such is the mentality of the Israeli Jew, that when he steals something, he says that it was given to him by God. The next country that we will take over will be Syria, and we'll create a regime change there. That's so that the oil pipeline, which presently goes between Iraq through Syria and into Haifa, Israel, will be opened up so that Israel can take the oil, which they're already working on. So when you say, what's next? My answer is, Syria is next. Well, I certainly think the United States of America is being very arrogant. I think our whole relationship to the United Nations is arrogant and geared to thwart the process of a reasonable world police force from coming into being. And we want a world police force. We don't want a world government, but we do want a police force that can call upon all of the nations of the world for soldiers to quell insurgencies and take the I have heard that the pipeline is going through Syria and that Syria will be next on the list. If I'm wrong and the pipeline is going through Jordan, then I would say Jordan will be next. But I'm just saying, if you want to know what our agenda is, it's to turn all of the Middle East over to Israel. And however that is done is how it will be done. I'm convinced that the pipeline is going through Syria, because that's the information that I've gotten. But it's a little bit off point from the question I'm discussing, which is whether the United States is being arrogant in its relations with the United Nations. And I think it is, because of the way the Nicaragua situation was handled. No, I am not anti-Semitic, unless, of course, you define anti-Semite as someone the Jews hate, because the Jews don't like me. I want to deprive the Jews of their ambitions to rule the world at the expense of my country, which is the United States of America. Now, that, I think, makes me someone the Jews hate, so therefore I would be called anti-Semitic. I do not hate the Jews. The Jews hate me. As for our arrogance in treating Nicaragua, we went into Nicaragua and effected a regime change in very much the same manner that we're presently doing it in Iraq. Nicaragua followed the proper procedures and went to the Security Council and asked the Security Council to sign a resolution that would force America to stop America's aggressive and illegal incursions into Nicaragua. All of the members of the Security Council signed such a resolution and presented it to America, which America vetoed. So the Security Council did not come through for the Nicaraguans. The Nicaraguans then took the next proper procedural step and went to the General Assembly. And all of the members of the General Assembly signed the same type of resolution. They don't have any enforcement power, but they do have the right, the General Assembly does have the power to make statements and make suggestions for the Security Council. So the entire membership of the General Assembly signed such a resolution, with the exception of the United States and Israel. So Nicaragua was thwarted. Nicaragua tried to fulfill the proper procedural steps to getting to putting an end to America's illegal aggression into Nicaragua, and it failed because the United States arrogantly, in my opinion, thwarted the procedural process. And this, I think, is America's major mistake. It's not so much that we want to be the police for the world as that we want there to be no police of the world, that we're very happy to go along with our thug-like companion Israel, who drops things from planes on Palestine's holidays so that Palestinian children will pick them up and get blown to bits. We are learning from our friends, the Israelis, and we are now sending cluster bombs into Iraq that have 500 little bomblets, and each little bomblet has a bunch of other little packages in them that are made to look like toys and bits of food, little packages of food, so that the children will pick them up and get their limbs blown off them. We think it's terribly funny, don't we? We think it's so funny treating these sand niggers like this and showing them how we can blow them up into little bits and tear their arms off of their children, because they're not real children. They're just little sand nigglets, and it's a lot of fun to tear sand nigglets into little pieces. We've learned that from the Israeli Jew. We've actually taken on the characteristics of the Israeli Jew in our too close relationship with them. You see, by protecting the Mafia Don, you take on the characteristics of a mafioso. There's no way out of it. And we have been protecting the Israelis in their complete atrocious treatment of the Palestinians. We've protected them. We have vetoed 31 resolutions that were signed by every single member of the Security Council, and which would have allowed the United Nations to go into Israel and put a stop to the atrocities, the torture, the bombings, the gassings, the bulldozing of the Palestinians. We have vetoed all of those incursions into Israel out of this odd loyalty that we have toward this atrocious terroristic state, and now we have become the terrorist ourselves, and we're dropping these same kind of bombs on children in Iraq, and we are also polluting the environment of Iraq with, I think it's called depleted uranium, which has caused the birth defects rate to go up by approximately 6 times. So that now an Iraqi woman has 6 times the potential probability of giving birth to a child with no eyes, and these children look inhuman. And I'm not a disgrace. You're going to have to blame yourself if you don't like the atrocities I'm talking about. You're going to have to blame the people who commit the atrocities. Don't blame the person who describes the atrocities. These children are born without arms and legs. These children are born without eyes. Sometimes they're born with only one eye, and they're very odd looking. These kids can never have normal lives. They're little cancer monsters, thanks to America's kind intervention in the fate of Israel. And if you don't like what I'm talking about, I hope it's because you don't like the horror that I'm describing, and not that you condemn someone for bringing the truth out so that these horrors can be stopped. I think there is a connection between atheism and communism. Communism is based on the premise that there is no God and that people should not obey their religious leaders, but should obey their secular leaders. That by obeying your government, you're more likely to create a society that benefits the people in the society. And what's wrong with that is that it deprives the individual from his inner dialogue with, if you will, his God. Men need that inner dialogue to use as a reference point with which to question their authority in order to maintain their individuality. I'm pretty sure that communism teaches that individuality is wrong, but religion teaches that individuality is right. Whether it comes right out and says it, it teaches it by teaching every man that his duty is to consult his God in an inner dialogue before he does anything. This makes him into an individual and a formidable force against a totalitarian government. So that's the connection between religion and communism. And that's why communism strikes down religion, in order to deprive the individual of that inner dialogue that can become a threat to the authority of the state. I have never said that atheism is synonymous with communism. I think other people have said that. Of course they're not synonymous. I have said that that communism requires that its people be atheistic, which is quite different. Atheism is only a small element of communism. There are other elements. For example, the idea that men and women are equal, and to the point where they're seen as almost the same. The sexual differences are played down. The nuclear family is played down. The emphasis on the heterosexual is played down. Homosexuality in such a climate thrives. Illegitimacy in such a climate thrives. And that's actually furthers the interests of communism, at least the kind of communism I've seen, because, as I said, communism depends for its existence on a malleable, controllable mass. What I think I'm saying that's disturbing some people is that the nuclear family strengthens the individual and makes him less controllable. What I'm saying that I think is disturbing some people is that religion makes a man less controllable and more of an individual. And I think these are the points that may be up for discussion now. Can we agree that the less controllable the individual, the better? Because if we can agree on that, and we may not be able to agree on that, I strongly promote the idea that a strong individual creates a strong state. If we can agree on that, then we can argue as to whether religion makes a man more or less controllable, or whether being loyal to a family makes him more or less controllable. But first we have to decide if we even like the idea of a strong individual as opposed to a compliant, controllable mass. So we can agree that it's a good thing to have the populace made up of individuals who are able to think for themselves, question authority, and articulate their beliefs and their thoughts in a diplomatic way, as opposed to taking in whatever they're told and incorporating that into their philosophy because they lack the ability to think for themselves. Some political schemes do not allow religion as part of the society. For example, communism. In communism, you're not allowed to have a religion. In a free society, you are allowed to have a religion. And the difference between these two political schemes is what makes religion part of a political discussion. Are you going to support a regime that allows religion or not? That's all we're discussing. And actually, we aren't even discussing that. Because my premise is that, of course, you're going to allow religion in a free society. What I'm trying to say is that religion is more likely to create a strong individual than no religion. Now we're not discussing freedom of religion as much as we're discussing individualism. We agree that individualism is a good thing. What we disagree on is how to create that good individual. My position is that religion is an element of a strong, healthy, good individual, and an atheist would argue the opposite. It is a subject for political debate. We're not discussing which religion is better. We're discussing whether religion is better. When communism was first introduced by Marx, it was considered that in order to have a successful communist state, religion had to be abolished. And after the assassination of the Tsar, the communists went around and killed all the priests and tore down all the churches. When Syria turned into a totalitarian state, the totalitarian elements married the primitive, superstitious fundamentalists. And a coalition between these two authoritarians took place to smash the will of the people who would object to the decisions of the government. So I would say that not all religion is good. Only a religion that teaches the individual to have this inner dialogue with God, which allows him to question authority, is good. A religion that teaches submissive obedience to the priests is just as bad as a state which disallows any dissent against the government. My point is that when you're taking over a country and liberating the country, you should be thinking in terms of liberating all of the people, not just a very small minority of disenfranchised, impoverished people. The majority of people in Iraq are not without education and impoverished and oppressed, as much as are the Kurds. That's the point I'm making. Relatively speaking, the Kurds were far more oppressed by the Saddam Hussein regime than the main people in Iraq. And I'm very suspicious of the propaganda we're seeing. For example, we're told that the people are starving and that the good Americans are giving them bread and water. But they were not starving before the Americans got there. You can tell that by looking at their arms. They're not even thin. In fact, most of the women are kind of fat when they get to be middle-aged, like every other middle-aged woman. These people have not been starving. What happened is that when we moved in and took over, we cut off their supply lines. I think it was called oil for food, which was supposed to be enforced, but somehow the oil for food program coincidentally stopped working when we moved into Basra. So we cut off their food. We're told that they cut off their own water, but what do you think is more likely? That the enemy cut off their water or that their own government cut off their water? I suggest to you that we went in like people do when they're taking over a country. We cut off their food supply, we cut off their water, and then we showed them food and water and said, if you come to us in a loving manner, we will give you food and water. So what I'm trying to say is, when you talk about a successful takeover, don't just point to the few of the most disorganized people and say they're happy, because they're going to be happy any time the authority is overthrown. How do I know these are disorganized people, criminal people? Because of the fact of the looting that you all saw. They didn't just loot the palaces. You saw them taking computers out of computer stores. It's normal, everyday looting, which always happens in some kind of a situation of unrest. Are you going to laud that? Are you going to magnify that as proof that this is a successful takeover? No, you're going to recognize it for what it is. It's the reaction of the lowest level of people to an opportunity to steal. And there's nothing heroic about that. I saw one man taking a computer out of what looked like a Staples store of some type, or at least a large store. I can't say it had a Staples sign on it. But he was taking a computer that was boxed, obviously from a store. And the news reports are saying that they're taking stuff from stores. They're not just looting the palaces. They're looting all of the stores as well. And that kind of store looting has nothing to do with expressing your anger or giving yourself needed food. It has to do with being a thief. So these people are obviously thieves. I promise you, if we had unrest in the neighborhoods of the United States that are well off and affluent, those people would not run out in the stores and start stealing. You see this kind of activity in the ghettos. And I'm not making this a racist statement. I'm talking about an economic statement having to do with lack of education, lack of culture, lack of self-control. These are the people who rise up in anger and start looting stores. And that's what they're doing here in Iraq. Does anybody notice the similarity between what we're seeing today in Baghdad and what happened during the Russian Revolution? Because I'm afraid we're going to see another Russian Revolution type operation. Our government has already told us that they're using experts on the Russian Revolution to take over Baghdad. And what that means is that the first step, which is to create chaos, is presently taking place. The handlers, our guys, have created the kind of instability that has the worst element of the society running through the streets and stealing everything they can. That's step one toward destroying a country. The next step will be, if they follow the Russian Revolution model, they will get this criminal element convinced that it's a good thing for them to go across the land and kill off all of the upper and middle class members of the society. That's how revolutions are done. And if we do that, we're even guiltier than we are now. In the Russian Revolution, that kind of mass execution, traveling over the land with guns, murdering property owners, officers in the army, the police, aristocracy, professional class, ended up killing 65 million Russians in order to put the communist regime in place. And that's my fear, that they're going to do that again. My propaganda is as good as anybody else's propaganda. All propaganda is a statement of policy. It's my opinion that the policy of the United States is to support Israel, no matter what. Now, I don't think that's a statement of hate. I think that's an analytical view. It may be incorrect, but look at you. Look at how people like who make that statement are immediately criticized and marginalized and castigated as being racist and haters. How do you imagine it happened that anybody who criticized Israel was suddenly stigmatized as if they were a witch? Do you think that's an accident? Or do you think that's part of a planned operation on the part of Israel to marginalize all of Israel's detractors. I maintain that David Ben-Gurion had no intention, and it shows up in his personal correspondence, of accepting the Israeli side of the partition plan. His intention at that time was to trick the United Nations and America into thinking he would be very content with that small portion of land, but in fact, he wanted all of the land from the Nile to the Euphrates because he felt that he could convince primitive Christians into believing the Jews were the chosen people. And there's a scripture in the Bible that could be interpreted as indicating that the chosen people, the Israelites, should be given all of the land from the Nile to the Euphrates. Of course, these Israelites also include Arabs, but nobody pays any attention to that. The Americans have been brainwashed into thinking Jews, not Arabs, are the chosen people. As I said, Palestinians were driven from the Israeli side of the partition plan, and then the Jews took over the Palestine part of the partition plan. The Israelis then expanded into southern Lebanon and Syria. They've taken the Golan Heights. What makes you think they're going to stop? Why does a person be threatened with going to hell? Why is a person called a hater and a racist for pointing out the obvious? Israel has already expanded about three times past her own borders. She's looking directly at Iraq. We, Americans, have just destroyed Iraq. Why is it satanic to suggest that this is part of an Israeli-American plan to expand Israel? I think it is human nature for people to support their leaders passionately and with devotion, and it's not a bad thing unless the leaders lead them wrong. The problem here is that we're being misled. We're being led into doing unethical things for bad reasons. This war is not going to benefit us. The American public has been hoodwinked by the leadership to believe that they can get away with stealing and murdering, and they're thrilled to do it. The rabble has been roused. They're running with sticks and stones and beating up Iraq. What fun this is! Look at all of the unrest. Isn't that exciting? And we're going to end up with all the oil and all the water and all the land. What a joyous thing to do! This is incorrect leadership. Leadership is supposed to be moral and is supposed to guide people into self-control, discipline, the qualities that create a stable, prosperous life. You don't get anywhere by ransacking countries and stealing. You might in the short term get something, but in the long term there will be a reaction. As Russia said before we attacked Iraq, you should not attack Iraq, America. Look at your relationship to Israel. That's your problem. If you do this unjust thing, if you attack Iraq and let Israel go free, when Israel is 10 times worse than Iraq, there will be serious consequences. And when China said that, I did not feel it was a threat. It was a wise statement. You can't commit mortal sin without there being repercussions. We don't know where those repercussions will come from. But I'm not an extraterrestrial for believing that virtue pays off. That's why we call it virtue, because it works. People prosper more if they live virtuous lives. There's no profit in stealing and murdering. Unfortunately, Americans have been convinced that sin pays off because our leadership is corrupt. But there will be a terrible price for this war. It'll either come to us from the Muslim world in the form of insurrections, or the world in general may turn against us. But nobody's going to let America and Israel become the ruling power of the globe if they're going to be, as they already have proven themselves to be, rogues and terrorists. The world is in great danger. That's what makes it so reprehensible for our government to be using this moment of crisis in history as an opportunity to make aggressive moves on different countries. without there being any suggestion that there's going to be control over the planet, which is what needs to happen now. We really are in danger. We really were attacked at 9/11. Weapons of mass destruction really have proliferated into the hands of irresponsible parties. But the only way to deal with a threat like that is as a planet as a whole. Instead of cooperating with the United Nations, we're severing ourselves and going about the task of just raping, pillaging, and stealing everything we want. What really bothers me is that we're not even going after our own enemies. We're going after Israel's enemy. According to Al Jazeera, the murder of their newscaster was a murder. It was intentional. Missiles went right through the windows and got the guy and his friend, and then returned and got the next news station in Baghdad, known as Abu Dhabi. So two news stations have been destroyed, but for some reason we're still getting some of the news, which I think is great. The webpage for Al Jazeera has completely changed, and you can't access the cartoons anymore, which were really the most important part for me, because the cartoons speak a universal language and made it very clear that the Arabian point of view on this is completely different from what we're told. They draw cartoons of Iraq being a sacrificial lamb being carved up by all of the predatory nations, and the Arabian leaders just being disorganized and not very intelligent, and we're just watching the destruction of an innocent country. But what we're watching when we look at the streets of Baghdad has nothing to do with Hitler. There was never this kind of chaos in Germany. The reason you think of chaos in relationship to Hitler is that after the Jewish Bolsheviks declared war on Germany and declared their allegiance to Mother Russia, Hitler rounded them up and put them in concentration camps exactly the way we did to the Japanese, because under international law, that's what you do with enemies of the state. The chaos we're seeing is exactly what happened in Russia. The Tsar was assassinated. The lower level, the unstable criminal elements were activated by the communist masters to rise up in the streets and loot Russia and destroy Russia, and then they were armed and given orders, or not orders because these people don't take orders, but were manipulated into running rampant all over Russia and murdering 65 million Russians. This is what happens with a revolution. What you're seeing is a planned revolution, and it's completely against the interests of Iraq. The question is, what will be left over when it's done? And I suggest that nothing will be left for Iraq. It'll be just like Russia. There will be a complete takeover of a foreign force. In the case of Russia, it was the Jewish Bolsheviks, the Zionist Bolsheviks, and I think that you're going to see these same people taking over Iraq as well in their conquest of Greater Israel. Out of the Second World War came Israel, and out of this war will come Greater Israel. The Zionists, Israel, the American Mafia will control all of the land from the Nile to the Euphrates. But on the way, you're going to see a bloody revolution. Millions of people will be murdered. Everything will be stolen. And you'll see the sacking of Iraq, an innocent country. Nobody's denying that the journalists were endangering themselves by being in the crossfire. But the question still exists, were these three propitious hits done on purpose or not? The first night, a journalist was almost killed when one of the missiles hit his car. It didn't kill him. The next day, the Al Jazeera news company was hit, and one man was killed, and his partner, who was sitting on the roof with him, was injured. The next day, the Abu Dhabi news office was hit. And also, remember, the guns went right into the top floor of the Palestine Hotel, which was the floor on which the journalists were living. So there's four direct hits against journalists, all of whom were telling the story that America didn't want to get told. And if you think America likes the transparency of this war, you're wrong. You recall in the Gulf War, the journalists were under total control of the government. Nothing was allowed to go out regarding the Gulf War that didn't go through the Pentagon first. Since the Gulf War, the internet has happened, and they can't keep the news a secret anymore. The whole world is able to access news from all over the world and other human beings in chat rooms from all over the world and discuss this news. So, for the first time in history, the spotlight of truth is glaring on the crime. At the same time, these criminals who have apparently been in the habit since at least the Russian Revolution of taking over countries at will, destabilizing them, plundering them, and leaving nothing left, have become more and more arrogant over the decades. And now they can stand on television, as you see Rumfield do, lie through his teeth with that vicious expression on his face, and tell you to believe him and not your lying eyes. I'm telling you, these people are being busted. History is busting these bastards. It wasn't a vacuum after the Russian Revolution. The Russian Revolution was carefully planned by Jewish Bolsheviks. After the Tsar was murdered, 50% of the party members were Jews, and 90% of the members of the Politburo, in other words, the commissars, were Jewish Bolsheviks. They were not armed gangs that took over Russia and assassinated 65 million white Christians. They were Khazar Jews from the Khazarias, which was located to the southeast of Russia, and there had been strife between these Khazarian Jews and Russia for a thousand years, ever since these Turkish Asiatics, known as the Khazarians, converted to Judaism in 700 AD in order to enjoy the worldwide Jewish-controlled slave trade. That's a piece of history that has been lost to us. Nobody except scholars who are willing to take tremendous abuse from their fellow Americans and other residents of the world have learned that there is a direct connection between communism and Zionism. However, this is not allowed to be discussed in seven countries, including Germany, Scandinavia, England, Australia, where it's against the law to question the Holocaust. You go to jail for 5 years in Germany for saying what I just said, which is that the Russian Revolution was architected and perpetrated and carried out by Jewish Bolsheviks. What I'm trying to tell you is that the chaos you're seeing on your television is the direct result of a planned revolution. We have not liberated the Iraqis. We have taken them over. We have assassinated their rulers. We are now activating their criminal element, and we already see these criminals stealing not just from the government who so oppressed them, but from their museums, their hospitals, the stores in the area. These are criminals you're seeing. These are not freed people. The fact that you think this chaos could possibly be the product of a liberated individual shows that you yourself have come to accept criminal behavior as normal, which shows how brainwashed you've been by the communists. The embedded press is just a response to the internet. There's no way America could keep this situation completely from the people. So this time, instead of forcing the press to stay in one hotel and feeding all of their information first to the Pentagon and then to the American people, our government tells us they're going to do this big fat favor and allow us to have an embedded press. But it's just because they're forced to. They're not giving anything to us, any human rights or civil rights or right of free speech that they aren't absolutely forced to give us. Look at the propaganda. Look how easy it is to see through. You all saw the children coming out of the jail, did you not? And you were all touched because you were told these children were wrongfully put into prisons by mean old Saddam Hussein. And here come the children, jumping and running up, so happy to be free and ready to go and loot the country. But did you notice that they gave gang signals? I think it's two or three fingers in the air, which is then turned downward toward the ground, and then you raise your hand up slightly and push it down again. These are universal gang symbols. This Iraq is part of the world. The gangsters in Iraq are just the same as the gangsters in America, and they act the same, they dress the same, and they use the same hand signals. These children were juvenile delinquents. They were correctly put in jail. And our press, our government, freed them and then lied to us and told us that these were poor, dear little children who had been victimized by mean, old, bad Saddam Hussein. What about Peter Arnett? What about the fact that a Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist lost three important jobs with CNN, Fox, and one other one? I think it was ABC. What about the fact that this Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist was forced to be fired from all of his connections with the American journalistic associations with which he was making money, that he had contracts with? He was destroyed as a journalist because he said one thing, and it was such an innocent thing to say. What he said was, the Americans wrongly assessed the resistance of the Iraqis and will have to redo the war plan. So obvious that not to say it would be stupid. But the fact that he said it was enough to get himself completely drummed out of his stellar career as an American journalist. That plus the hits on the Al Jazeera news building, the Abu Dhabi news building, the shots into the Palestine hotel in the exact room where the journalists were hanging out, the shot against the journalist two nights before that who was getting into his car when his car blew up, should tell you we don't have freedom of the press. We don't have freedom of speech. Maybe you don't care about freedom of speech because maybe your life doesn't mean much to you. Maybe it's enough for you to get up in the morning, keep your mouth shut, pour your coffee, go to work, keep your mouth shut, go home, have sex with your wife, and keep your mouth shut. But that's not the life of a human being. Human beings have a very rich inner dialogue, especially people who have a religious bent and like to talk to God and pray and think things over and meditate. This inner dialogue is what's being repressed when freedom of speech goes out the window, because this inner dialogue, the soul of man, is meant to be shared through speech. When they stop you from speaking, they stop you from being a human being, and you need to fight for that right, at least in the confines of your own house. You need to start talking to each other. Actually, I'm sort of preaching to the choir on the internet, because we're already sitting here talking to each other, but I'm just saying Americans need to talk to each other. We need to exercise our freedom of speech and make sure we keep it. It's completely insincere to argue that Peter Arnett had done anything wrong whatsoever in light of the fact that Geraldo Rivera was disciplined but not fired for drawing a map in the sand which the camera picked up and which revealed the location of the troops. That really endangered the troops, but he didn't lose his job. Now, why would he not lose his job, but Peter Arnett, who did not endanger the troops, did lose his job? There's more to it than just being wealthy and privileged. You can get into a situation where your privilege is so outrageous compared to what you're doing to get your privilege that people attack you. For example, the lady speaking kind of reminded me of Marie Antoinette. If you don't know who she was the Queen of France during the French Revolution, and she was beheaded because this lovely lady, who was a great historical beauty, was so selfish and out of touch with the starvation of the people of France that when people came to her and said, "My queen, the people are starving. What shall we do?" She said, "Oh, they are out of bread? Well, then let them eat cake." This comment she made became historically important because it showed that she had no concept. Her innocence, she was so protected by her wealth and her power that she couldn't grasp the fact that people were actually starving. And her comment was misinterpreted to mean, "Oh, who cares about the people? Let them eat cake, ha ha ha," as if they would ever eat cake, which is not what she meant. She really meant, well, if the poor things don't have bread, then of course they should have cake. She did not understand that they didn't have bread. That's how protected she was by her wealth and by her power. And that's what America has to not have happen to America. Because if we become so out of touch with the suffering we're inflicting on other people in order to have our privileges, which I greatly enjoy too and don't want to give up and don't intend to give up, but if we become out of touch with the suffering we're causing, the suffering people will rise up against us. And I think it's folly to think we're untouchable just because at the moment we're all so happy. Well, I'm not absolutely sure that democracy is the only legitimate form of government. I love it myself, but I'm an educated person, and most people in America are educated, and that's what it takes to make democracy work. When I look around at the rest of the world, I'm not so sure that all kings are bad. I don't like communism very much, now that I learned that after they assassinated the white Christian czar, the communists assassinated 65 million Russians in order to implement their beautiful plan of government. So I don't know necessarily that kings are that bad, as long as they're benevolent. And in the case of Saddam Hussein, he wasn't benevolent, but he was about the same as the other Arab despots. He wasn't any different. In fact, he started out being more benevolent until the Gulf War, and then apparently he cracked down on his people because they started starving, partly because of sanctions that the United Nations placed on his country, and he couldn't sell oil anymore, so they were all starving. The point I'm trying to make is, what price democracy? Are you willing to inflict these kind of birth defects on children? I'll put the post up. I'm not. Take a look at those birth defects and tell me that that's okay. Some of those kids are born without faces, without brains. They're just confused pieces of people. They look like little confused hunks of baby parts, just kind of glued together with cancerous tissue. And the rate of these deformities has gone up 6 times what it should normally be, thanks to the radiation that we spread all over the Gulf during the first Gulf War, and our weapons are much worse this time. So how can you just say it's such a wonderful gift we give to this country? Why don't you consider that our government has lied to us? Our government presented false evidence to us to get this war going. The change in purpose for the war changed overnight from weapons of mass destruction to liberating the Iraqi people. Why don't you consider the fact that a lying government might also be a thieving government, might also be a murdering government, and take a look at your government with a hard eye? If you allow your government to lie to you to the extent of falsifying evidence of connections between Saddam Hussein and the Al-Qaeda,
which they did. They presented forged documents on South African stationery that was outdated, that they had stolen years ago, and forged signatures of dignitaries that were not their own signature in order to convince Congress to go to this war. This evidence was supposed to be evidence that Saddam Hussein was trying to do a deal with this South African country to buy radiation or nuclear material. That's one of the lies we were told. The most obvious one was when we were told for the last year, don't ask us what evidence we have of the connection between Saddam Hussein and Al-Qaeda. We have it, but we can't show it to you because it would breach national security. And then on the big day of the unveiling, within 1 week of when we attacked Iraq, Colin Powell went into the United Nations and presented this so-called hot-off-the-press secret evidence that would threaten national security, which turned out to be a plagiarized document written by a student and public record as early as 8 years ago. It was not new evidence, it was not honest evidence, and it was certainly not a threat to national security to reveal it since it had been public for 8 years. Those are two. There's more. I mean, the endless lies the government has told us in the United Nations in order to get us into this war must cause any thinking person to become suspicious of this country's motives for the war. How evil is this country going to turn now that it's proven to lie to its own people? And once we discover, if we do, and it looks like we are, that our government has turned evil, what does that place in terms of a burden on the American people? I would say a very heavy burden, since we are a free people. Once we have in our hands the knowledge that our government is committing hideous murders, deforming children with horrible weapons of mass destruction, going to war for no good reason, do you understand that that means that each of us as American citizens then are burdened with the obligation to put a stop to this because we are free?
I have to.
That's all for tonight, folks. It's been my pleasure to talk to you on www.rahoa.org. And I'll be talking to you again soon. Remember, the Holocaust was a hoax perpetrated by Jews to make white people give up their lives for the formation of Israel. The attack on Iraq is just another example of the same thing. White boys and girls, men and women, are going to give their lives so that the Jews can have even more land for Israel. All of the land from the Nile to the Euphrates, which is known as Greater Israel. Americans are free, ladies and gentlemen. Let's exercise our freedoms to put a stop to this war.